This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk. My guest is the one and only Gloria Steinem, the face of feminism for decades and author of My Life on the Road, her seventh book. Welcome to our program.
Thank you so much.
You've been on the road most of your life. Why did you publish the book now?
I had been writing articles and essays and, you know, and other books. And suddenly I realized that actually I was writing least about what I was doing most, which was traveling, because those were all different kinds of books or essays or single subject. And I realized how much it mattered to me that I was out there listening as much as talking and seeing that the country can't be generalized about. You know, people talk about the American people as if there was a lump, you know, which is just not true. Also, the road is usually thought of as a male province, and I thought it would be good to take it back and say it's everybody's province.
Indeed it is. Fair to say you became famous after the Playboy Bunny expose published in 1963?
Well, it was a mistake to do it, obviously. It was a big career error because it is... let me put it this way. It was not a career error in the sense that the expose changed the working conditions there.
So of the Playboy
Bunny. Of the Playboy Club, yeah. So I'm glad about that. But to be ever taken seriously again became much more difficult. And even now, at 82 years of age, when people really don't like me, they say, oh, well, she just, you know, is there because she was a Playboy Bunny.
Is that right?
Yeah. So, tactically it was an error, but, you know... I'm glad it helped the working conditions.
And then Ms. Magazine in 71. So these are your claim to fame.
Well, yes, Ms. Magazine matters very much to me because we were a large group of women writers and editors, and we were hyper aware that women's magazines, while helpful when you were buying clothes or cooking or, I don't know, for lots of things, they weren't really magazines we read because they were dictated to by the advertising categories. So we wanted to start a magazine that we actually read. It was quite simple. Of course, we didn't know how hard it was. If we had known, we might have thought twice about doing it. But it's still going. I'm very proud of it.
Yes.
Now the Feminist Majority is publishing it 4 times a year because now it's online, mm-hmm. too.
I've seen many descriptions of your work. How would you describe it?
Well, you know, it's hard to... describe, isn't it? Because I've never actually had a job, so...
Well, you've certainly supported yourself.
Yeah, I've supported myself, but I mean, you know, it's... So, I mean, what I identify most with is writing, even though it's not necessarily the case, that unfortunately, that I'm doing it most of the time. Mm-hmm. So I usually describe myself as a writer and organizer. And I'm very fond of the word organizer because I think it means... striving to be a kind of entrepreneur of change, you know, by just perhaps looking at a situation and being able to suggest making connections or, you know, another way of phrasing the issue or, you know, a multitudinous possibility there. But it's creative and infinitely interesting.
Just off the top of your head, what are some of the organizations you've worked with as an organizer?
Well, the first big experience, really, for me, was the National Women's Political Caucus, because the National Organization for Women at that point was not an electoral organization. It covered, you know, all the issues. It was the first big umbrella organization, but it wasn't electoral. So we started the caucus and became a presence at both of the 1972 political conventions. Of course, we also, you know, had all kinds of altercations and, you know, it was extremely difficult. It probably shortened all our lives just trying to get women's voices heard on the floor, get women's issues into the platform, you know, all of it.
Was it worse then than it is today?
Oh my goodness, yes. Are you kidding? Yes, totally, definitely worse, right. But worse in different ways. It was being present at all, you know, that was very difficult.
What's been the most important change since those days?
Well, it's hard to pick one. I would say, actually, if I was going to pick one, I would say, now we know we're not crazy, the system is crazy. This is deep.
It is deep.
But we, you know, we now have all kinds of issues that we didn't have names for before. Domestic violence had no name and no laws against it, and cops thought they were successful if they got the victim and the criminal back together again. Sexual harassment had no name and no laws against it. Reproductive freedom was not yet added to the list of freedoms, the ability to decide when and whether to have children. Even equal pay was contentious because it was thought that women didn't, quote-unquote, need the money as much as men did. So, you know, we've come a long way in defining issues, in passing legislation and seeing what's wrong, but clearly it took centuries to get us here. It's going to take at least a century to get us to any kind of parity.
One of our granddaughters introduced me to a new word, microaggression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's an interesting word because it helps us examine our behavior, both our behavior and behavior toward us. I mean, for instance, a microaggression from a racial and sex point of view might be who talks and who listens. And if you just go into a situation and say, okay, if I have more power than the other folks here, I'm going to listen as much as I talk. And if I have less power, I'm going to talk as much as I listen, which sometimes is just as hard because we're used to hiding.
Yes.
It's a kind of organic democracy.
And you are an observer by nature.
Yes, journalists are observers, and I think it's part of the appeal to women, too, because you can observe and record without entering into the fray. Of course, once you're part of a movement, you discover the fray is right there. And also you care so much that you can't just write about it.
Right.
And that was how I began to speak in public, even though I had avoided it until I was in my mid-30s. So that was the fray for me.
You've said time is all there is, and you don't want to waste it. Now that you're 82, as you mentioned, what are your burning issues?
Well, there's so many. I mean, I have to last to 100 just to meet my deadlines.
Are there any advantages to being older in dealing with all these issues?
That's an interesting question. I think maybe the biggest advantage is that I've seen change, so I have faith in change.
So you know it can happen.
I know it can happen. Of course, the other side of that coin is I know how long we've been trying to...
How long it takes.
Yeah. But I do think experience helps. But I also think the being young and full of energy and hope also helps. I think we need each other.
It all works together.
Yes.
What's your advice for millennial women?
My advice for millennial women is do not listen to my advice. Listen to yourself. Listen to your own talents. You know, what do you love to do so much you forget what time it is when you're doing it? Maybe, you know, that's a gauge and speak out about unfairnesses you are experiencing, because change is like a tree. It's more likely to grow from the bottom than the top. And I'm here to support you. So I'm assuming two things were right. Voting, because the voting booth is the only place on earth where the least powerful and the most powerful are equal. So I'm assuming vote power, and I'm assuming dollar power, that we do our best to spend our dollars in a way that reflects our values.
What's next for you?
I want to work on a more Vice documentaries, because I do think it's a great way of being a witness to things that are going on around the world, and also to become a writer again.
Thank you. My guest is Gloria Steinem, author of My Life on the Road, published by Random House. This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk.